5 for argument this morning is United States against Rodriguez-Gomez. Mr. Brost.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. My name is Jason Brost, and I represent the appellant Gerardo Rodriguez-Gomez. Mr. Rodriguez is currently serving a 100-month sentence for violation of 8 U.S.C. 1326 for illegally reentering the United States. Today we're challenging the trial court's decision to add 16 points under the guidelines to Mr. Rodriguez's guidelines sentencing range on the basis that he had previously been convicted of a crime of violence prior to an earlier deportation. This decision was made without proper evidence, and so we asked the court to vacate the sentence and remand for resentencing. It's three basic issues that the court has to consider in this case. First of all, the issue of waiver or forfeiture. We certainly contend Mr. Rodriguez forfeited but did not waive this objection at the trial court level. The second question is, assuming that he forfeited this objection, did the trial court commit plain error by adding the 16-level enhancement? And third, if so, is this an error affecting substantial rights so as to justify a remand? Clearly, Mr. Rodriguez did not waive this objection before the trial court. A waiver is an intentional relinquishment of a known right, as opposed to a forfeiture, which is an accidental or negligent omission. There's nothing in the trial court record to indicate that Mr. Rodriguez or his counsel intended to waive this objection. In fact, there's really nothing in the record to consider that to suggest that they considered this objection or that anybody did. At sentencing, Mr. Rodriguez, when given a chance to speak himself, made some sort of general statements objecting to the 16-level enhancement not particularly articulately, but on the basis that it was generally unfair. At sentencing, the only other thing that happened then was a very simple conversation between the trial court and counsel, which is nearly identical to the conversation that took place in United States v. Jimenez-Jimenez, in which this court found that the defendant had forfeited but not waived his objection. And it's a very similar case, same crime charged, the same sentencing enhancement being challenged. In both cases, the trial court stated that the defendant had previously been deported after conviction for a felony that was a crime of violence, that this led to a 16-level enhancement, and then asked, do the attorneys agree? In Jimenez, the defense counsel said, we do. In Rodriguez, defense counsel said, we agree. So basically the same answers to the same question, basically the same evidence as to whether or not this was, a waiver or a forfeiture. Jimenez is actually a stronger case for waiver because in Jimenez, the defense had actually...
Suppose we agree with you that this is a forfeiture. You're still behind the eight ball. That's the plain error doctrine. Mm-hmm. And let me tell you what I see as the problem. Everything seems to turn on whether the state conviction was under sub A1, which deals with bodily injury plus a police officer, or under sub A2, which deals with offensive touching plus a police officer. If it was under sub A2, we know from the Supreme Court's new decision in Johnson against the United States that it doesn't count. Correct. If it's under sub A1, that bodily injury, then it does count. Now, aren't we bound by the fact that the defense has forfeited this point to conclude that it's under sub, that the state conviction is under sub A1?
No, Your Honor, because at the trial court level, subsection 1 and subsection 2 are simply never discussed.
Of course they're never discussed because this issue was forfeited. But the prosecutor asks for this enhancement, and the pre-sentence report recommends it. The pre-sentence report looks like it's describing the state conviction as under A1. Now, at this point, the defense could put the prosecution to its proof and say, produce the record of conviction. Show us that it's under A1 rather than A2. But the defense doesn't put the prosecution to its proof. It's forfeited. So aren't we bound? We're back to my question. Aren't we now bound to assume that it's under A1, as the pre-sentence report asserted, when the defense just stood mutely?
Your Honor, I would say that you're not so bound, and you're not so bound in part because the law as to this distinction is not developed at the time of this trial to the extent that has been today. That is, as you point out, the Supreme Court made a decision just a couple weeks ago regarding offensive touching battery and whether or not that makes a decision, finding that it did. At the time that this case was before the trial court, the law, again, is not nearly as well developed.
Actually, the Johnson case followed a decision in this circuit that came down in 2006 or 2005. The law in this circuit was crystal clear. There has been no development, at least in this circuit's law, in the last 5 years. It was very clear at trial that the distinction between A1 and A2 made all the difference. But we're back to my point, right? The defense doesn't put the prosecution to its proof. Aren't we bound to assume it is as the pre-sentence report described it, that is, an A1 conviction?
Again, my understanding of forfeiture, Your Honor, is that the defense basically accidentally or negligently omitted this issue entirely. And, yes, therefore, there's not a record.
So to find prejudice, why isn't it incumbent upon the defense to come forward with something that indicates that the pre-sentence report was wrong about this?
The pre-sentence report is not the sort of evidence that this court...
It's not evidence, right? That's why there's a hearing. The defense can say, pre-sentence report is not enough. Bring in evidence. Let me put this question in a different way. Do you have any reason today, as you are standing here, to believe that this was an A2 conviction? Have you gotten a hold of the judgment of conviction from the state court and seen that it recites A2 rather than A1?
Your Honor, my review has been limited to what's in the record. And the
Well, but then, look, if you want to show there's prejudice or harm or something like that, you need to show that the state conviction was under A2 and that everybody's misunderstood it here. For all we know, not only was the issue forfeited, for all we know, the pre-sentence report was just exactly spot on.
Again, Your Honor, you're correct. I don't know what else is in the record, but what else is in these other documents that, again, were not put in the record. So, again, defense counsel's at trial counsel's error was in not raising this issue at all and therefore not developing a record. And therefore, there's simply not enough for the trial court to make the determination that this was, in fact, an A2 violation. Which or an A1 versus an A2, which again is not referenced anywhere.
How would it work to have an A2 conviction where the defendant knowingly or intentionally caused bodily harm by kicking him?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's what the PSR tells us, right? Why on earth would that be charged as an A2 rather than an A1?
I believe the PSR is referring to what's in the police report,
yeah,
or what's
mm-hmm.
other sorts of records,
mm-hmm.
and so you know it's it, that may be
indictment.
In fact what he was charged
describes
with.
Describes the indictment, yeah.
That may be what he was charged with. Whether that's actually the crime he eventually pled guilty to is the real question.
I understand the world is full of plea bargains. They may have bargained to a lesser charge like A2, but
correct.
Again, the reason the record is silent on this is because of the forfeiture. And it does seem to me that at a minimum, at this point, you need to go get the state record and say, I'm going to show prejudice by showing that it was, in fact, an A2 conviction. File an affidavit to that effect. Do something to show that a mistake was made.
Okay. I see that my light is on, so unless you have further questions, I'll reserve the remainder of my time.
Mm-hmm. Certainly, Mr. Brost. Ms. Bonamici.
Good morning, Your Honors. Please, the Court. Your Honors, the government does absolutely agree with the points that have been raised during my opponent's argument. The fact is, because the defendant forfeited this issue, the record was not fully developed. However, the record does include a quotation from the charging document under which the defendant was convicted. There was, of course, no objection not only to the enhancement, but also to the accuracy of the government's quotation from the charging document.
Counsel, I'm I'm puzzled about why we're here. Why isn't it just normal practice of the prosecutor to get hold of a copy? If you got a if you're moving for a recidivist sentence, why don't you just, as a matter of course, get hold of a copy of the state conviction? Put the record of conviction in, and then there's never any doubt about what the person was convicted of.
Well, the government did get hold of the state conviction, and the government got hold of the charging document, and the only failure here that we can identify is a failure to attach it to the government's version.
Put it in the record.
Which certainly would have been, you know, it would have prevented us from being here, yep. And that would have been good, and certainly something that we'll do in the future. But the fact is the government did have a copy of the charging document and the statement of conviction, and while that was not included in the record in toto, it was provided to counsel on appeal.
There, that was my question. It was provided to counsel prior to the hearing.
It was not provided to, the record is
not
silent. The record is silent as to that, but I will say this. The probation officer noted in the PSR on page 1 at lines 25 to 28 that she had reviewed the documents related to the defendant's prior convictions, and there's no reason.
Did you have a copy besides the probation officer having a copy? Did you have a copy, or did your office have a copy of that?
Yes, we used it to quote from in the government's version.
Yeah, well, my curiosity piques me. Did you show it to the defense counsel?
Because I was not counsel below, and there's no record
you
of
don't
that,
know.
I don't know the answer to that question.
Simple answer is you don't know.
I don't know. But I do believe that the record suggests that counsel did have a copy of it, because that is the best reason of all for not challenging the enhancement.
You wouldn't raise the issue if you're going to punch yourself in the mouth in the process.
Correct.
I'm honestly curious as to whether you had an open door where the guy walked, your defense lawyer walks in and says, show it to him. That's the used to be the process back when I was a boy, but that's a long time ago.
There's no reason to believe that the defense counsel did not have a copy of the of
I know,
the
I was just trying. He right. said normal to let him look at it.
Normally, yes. We would. Yeah. I mean, yes.
Things have not changed then.
Yeah, there's no reason to believe that he didn't have it. And as I say, the best evidence of that is that he chose not to challenge the enhancement. But I would want to point out, Your Honor, that we do have a copy of it, both the charging document and the conviction, and after the briefing in this case, just to make sure.
Have you shown it to the present counsel?
We did. Well, it was faxed to him, but after the briefing was concluded, actually in response to the reply brief, to make sure that everybody was on the same page. So it is a fact that the defendant was convicted under the divisible portion of the statute that has been held by this court to be a crime of violence. There was no error, and that's true even if the issue was forfeited rather than waived, and the government does still feel that there's enough evidence in the record for this court to find that the issue was actually waived. But in any event, the government respectfully requests that the judgment of conviction and sentence of the district court be affirmed. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Anything further, Mr. Brost?
Just quickly, Your Honor. The government's position now is that the actual charging document will show something different, and that may be the case. It's just simply that charging document is not in the record, and that was
our. Have you seen it?
I got a fax from them and saw a.
So you did see it.
Yes, there's yes. But that it's not, again, was not properly for the record, and therefore had no opportunity to actually address whether it really fit the criteria or not.
Mm-hmm.
Have no further questions. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. And Mr. Brost, we appreciate your willingness to accept the appointment in this case.